Halfway through the year almost, kind of mind-boggling. Again, you're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Walter, the host. I am also the president of Coins Plus and started that business many moons ago. It's interesting how time flies. Prior to that, we've been in business. I started business really in 96. I think our doors, the official, when I disconnected from the rest of society and went in full-time was late 98, 99. But I was doing business before that, loving it, loving coins. The business has seen a lot of comes and goes, a lot of ups and downs. It's a very challenging business, a lot more than people realize. Very challenging for employees. There's just a lot to know. You can make a lot of mistakes in this business. I mean, we deal a lot in rare coins, and they're, you know, over the years I've had people that, you know, I've tried to educate and they don't understand. And then you'll get some people, one in particular that was just maybe really ADD and just really had some things, you know. And the mistakes were pretty astounding that occurred and that we found later. And it's a mindset. It's really interesting. I was fortunate. God is so good. I got out of college, you know. Somehow in college, I ended up with a degree, my bachelor's degree in applied mathematics and statistics. People don't know much about that. I don't either. But it's kind of like, it's pretty intense. It's really hard to get, and the amount of work is insane. And when you get done, you really, all you have is a springboard for the next level. You can get a lot of different jobs with tech companies. I could have worked for Microsoft or Boeing and or different statistician positions and things like that. But I had other studies and minors and different things. And then I did some postgraduate economics work, which is basically foolishness. It's really interesting when I listen to people who are, quote, professional economists. And some of them are bright and some of them aren't. And it has nothing to do with their degree. Economics degree is really interesting because economics is God. God created money and wealth and all this stuff for our own benefit, for our own testing, our own refining, okay? So it's made for us, but economics is also very commonsensical. I mean, it's like you don't need a PhD to comprehend it for the most part. You start to look at things in depth, certain things deeper and deeper. But in general, the concept, what I'm saying is there is a certain professor of a certain school, very well known, who is a good friend of mine over the years. And it's funny because I have a pretty strong economic background and he obviously does too. And he leans a little different politically than I do, but the good news is he's come far to the right from his radical positions, and all this junk that's going on has been a catalyst towards that. But when we get debating, if you will, he always falls back, and I give him a hard time on supply and demand. Okay, you might say, why would that be funny? Because that's the very first thing you learn in economics. Everything is supply and demand. Okay? Simple. So this guy's not only got his PhD, but he's teaching PhDs, and he always falls back to supply and demand. I'm like, what good is all that study if that's all you go to? And he's the kind of guy who can razz like that. He said what happens is you get at the higher economics level, you just get where you can process a lot more information on a lot higher level. And I said, yeah, I helped a lot of the economists or some or whatever through their master's and PhD in they had to gain statistics credits. Most said it was the hardest class they took. And he said, yes, that's it. It's science, math, basically, as he said, it's math. And it's math and it's verbiage or vernacular. They learn what to say, how to say it, when to say it, and what to look for. And that's about it. In general, economics is a spirit of attitude. It's, you know, it's like the saying, which I probably am butcher shopping, you know, your station in life is 90, by the way, this is my quote, not exactly someone else's, but anyway, your station in life is 90% determined by attitude and 10% by circumstance, okay? Or 90% choice and 10% circumstance. There are things outside of our control, no questions. But we are not the broken victims that we seem to want to be. I'm not, I don't, you know, I was thinking today, how about that? You should have been there to see it. But anyway, I was thinking about the African-American community today. Okay, I mean, not all day, but with all this stuff going on. I mean, you know why? Because I was listening to the Reverend Al Sharpton. You know, the, I don't know what other word I'd use to call him instead of Reverend, but I won't do that right now. He's a race baiter, okay? So he comes out today with the same old speech. These people, folks, what is it with us? And by us, I mean humans. I don't care if you're black or white. We are the same. The way we perceive things, at least I hope we are. I understand, you know, generationally people learn different cultures and skills and whatever you call it. But, I mean, why do we buy into this? Wanting to be told we're victims. I really don't understand why people want to be victims. Why they want somebody else to be responsible for them, for their outcome, for their, you know, why? I mean, why? I'm sitting there, you know, he's talking about 400 years of oppression, and he gives a sermon, and it's just more of the same. Folks, here's the truth. The more I watch this, first of all, this writing is just, this is a bunch of concocted crap, okay? This cop who killed that black guy, which was heinous and disgusting and horrid. You watch the video, you think the guy's demon-possessed. He probably is. But, I mean, I'm serious. It's like he's overtaken. And then later on I hear that he used to work with the guy. And then I hear that he's from, like, two precincts over. That cop's not even supposed to cover that area. And they paired him up with these other thug cops. And then had him called out on this deal, which was a false charge. And they knew that this cop had said, and I heard this from a Secret Service agent, this cop had said if he ever got a chance to put his hands on that guy, on George Floyd, he would kill him. These are the facts that are not hitting the news. They worked together, apparently in a high-end, you know, bar or something as fellow security guards and bouncers. Well, the problem with that probably is the cop's off duty, he's working another job, and he doesn't have the same authority, and he gets mad because he can't control people or his coworkers like he's used to, because maybe he's a power freak. There is a level of sociopathy that enters that profession, meaning, you know, they hit a wall, a threshold. You have to be a black and white thinker to be a good cop, in a way. I mean, you have to shut out. And, you know, then it's, you go black and white, and then, and I don't mean race, I mean good and bad, where you just see the law for what it is. Then you, hopefully you have enough common sense to back off and offer grace a lot and really see it in God's eyes. Because I would disagree that, you know, when I see police now hiding. The other night, I was driving, and on the opposite side of the interstate, I see this cop pull out on a gal. And, I mean, he is back. It reminds me of spiders looking for flies, you know. And there's some of these gross spiders that dig holes in the ground or, you know. And they're hiding now. They literally are hiding. And I was talking to my wife on the phone, on Bluetooth while I'm driving, of course, through my car. I've never put a phone to my ear, right? And I'm talking to her, and I said, what is this, man? I said, that guy just came out of nowhere. I mean, I saw him. He was hidden so crazy. And I'm like, okay, what is the purpose of a police officer? I mean, the whole idea, to protect and serve, right? Not to be alienated and hated. And if they're alienated and hated, what have we done in society? I mean, the problem goes all the way. It's systemic. It goes from our training. It goes from our thought process. It goes from people. It sounds dumb, folks, but we need to be proud to be Americans. We need to feel good about what we have. You know, if you grow up in a family and you got a beautiful piece of gorgeous land and it's got trees and rocks and streams and, you know, ponds, and you just really cherish it and you really take care of it, and people come and start trying to ruin it, you're going to fight like hell to protect your land. So eventually, you know, this is what we need to be doing, to be honest with you. Frankly, I mean, you look at what we're doing. We're letting all these people, call them what you want, but if they're coming to America and they don't love America, get out. They're destroying our country. A lot of the, I think some, you know, the change in police officers to a degree has been driven by probably immigration. There's different, you know, we've always had the racism issue. And I don't know, there's people on all sides of that racism fence, but it's just so disgusting to me. But the whole thing is, when these police officers get this way, it's, you know, it's their responsibility and ours. But the thing is, what's going on societally right now, what is a cop supposed to do? Do you guys, have you seen the amount of violence that has risen up against cops since this George Floyd thing came? And can you imagine, folks, I mean, what would it be like to be a cop right now and listening to all this crap? I mean, just to constantly be under the limelight. Why do these guys do this? I've seen, even in Spokane City, we're getting some really neat hires. I've seen a lot of young guys that are, you know, they're good in every way. They got great degrees. They got good performance in their background. I've talked to them. They're very physically fit. You know, they're amazing. These are top hires. The pay is probably good, you know, really, for what they get. But the thing is like, what, why do people do this, to take that level of abuse? We've got, like I said, we've got things going on out there right now racially that are just, these cops are taking continuous abuse all the time, nonstop. And I mean, I stand behind them 100%. As I believe in every area of life, it's really a great sign when you, if you have someone of that caliber in that position, controlling themselves and, you know, exercising self-control, not taking things personally, because, you know, sometimes you're going to get a little ticked off and irritated with people, but you can't be using the badge as a vengeance. And I think that's the problem. The other problem is that, like I said, the lack of love for America. Our education system is troublesome at best. I mean, what is going on here in America? My mind's bouncing, but because I'm just seeing us be disassembled, even our education system. We have got so much going on. I can't even believe it. But, you know, these cops are taking tons of abuse. And as I was saying, we're abusing racism. I mean, we use the term so often. It's ridiculous, you know, and so Al Sharpton gives us this 400 years of oppression sermon, and if you know him, he's a creeper. Then they dump this white guilt on us, okay? I guess I just gave up the fact that I'm white. You probably thought I was black, but hey, there you go. Now you know. But white guilt is used to project responsibility for the performance of, say, whatever, African Americans or whatever it is, onto others. It's not, you know, their fault per se. It's these leaders that want power and control, power grabs. They go in and they go, you know what? Why don't we like to hear that? You know, it's kind of like maybe when the first unions were formed. The message was there before, but some guy puts it together and he goes, look, man, you guys are getting screwed. You know, you're working 18 hours a day for 13 cents an hour or whatever. And, you know, and this guy's living here and there and all, you know. And then people are like, yeah, that's not right. That's not right. Okay. And but what's going on now with the whole thing? You know, there's a time and a place for everything, as Solomon said. But as what's going on right now is we are just in eternal disdain. Eternal discontent. There's nothing that makes us happy. And it's like I've said in the past, it reminds me of the immune system in America. They say, hey, look, you know, because we don't have all this stuff coming at us all the time like we used to, our immune system goes crazy and starts eating us up. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't think it probably is, but that's what they say. I mean, it doesn't, you know, or creates these autoimmune function things. Well, you know, there's always contributing factors like diet and other things. But at the same time, that's the concept. It's like our life is so good and things have been so grand and so great that we have to have chaos. And you get these disruptors. Folks, I'm going to tell you straight up. From early in the United States, right out of the box, and I was speaking to somebody about this here recently who was very connected, very well positioned in the military, and they were unaware of this stuff, that our founders started, namely Jefferson, started the U.S. Marine Corps, which became, or the Marines, which became the Navy, which became our, you know, the president's job was to protect the borders. We created that, Old Ironsides, USS Constitution, specifically because of Islam. The Barbary pirates were out looting and pillaging and maiming our people beyond comprehension. This is like late 1700s. I mean, we were nothing. We were just warming up. So Jefferson and Adams, both ambassadors from Europe at the time, went to see the Pasha of Tripoli. That's the guy. That's the guy that at the time, he was the big dog on campus. And they went to see him and say, man to man, to appeal to his better senses, Jefferson said, or as humanity. So they say, look, we are a good people. This is Jefferson. He's saying, we're a good people. We're hardworking. We're industrious. We're just starting out. We're just getting by. And you're picking our people off. You're killing them. You're stealing. You're raping our women. You're, you know, and the Pasha of Tripoli, according to Jefferson, shows no sympathy and no empathy at all whatsoever. And he goes and he gets a Quran. Well, if you understand back then, books were a lot tougher to get than they are now. Jefferson had over 6,000 books in his collection. At the time, that was a sign of tremendous wealth. Okay? So he brings him this Quran. Apparently, according to Jefferson's journals, he apparently read broken Arabic. He knew how to read Arabic. And so he started to read where the Pasha was guiding him, and he's like, this says that, you know, it says we're infidels and we're no good. And then the Pasha continued to explain to him that that was the case, that they are rubbish, they are trash. That means, you know, we've got what the Jews would used to refer to as the Gentiles, which is what many of us are now. But these are what they call the infidels. The infidel is anybody who's not one of them. You ever watched human behavior? Clickety click clack. We connect, we click. We have clicks. You know what clicks are? People of common agreement on certain terms and topics. At certain times in your life, you gather or gravitate towards certain people that share certain beliefs that are important to you at that time. A year or two later, that person could be your enemy or somebody you completely disagree with on other topics. That's the problem with the infidel. The infidel is anyone who's not in the, what, Muslim golden circle. And then they create these barbaric medieval, terrible ways of, you know, dealing with people. I mean, and it creates a terrible, I mean, violent, torturous, terrible stuff, horrible, heinous, terrible stuff, right in their scriptures. Jefferson gets all this. So my point is this. Jefferson comes back and he writes and he says, please do not. Well, first of all, he goes back to the Congress in 1800. Our budget at that time, this is when he ran for president. And by the way, when you think about it, running for president back then didn't take 2 years. It took about a week or two. But he comes back and he talks to Congress and he says, hey, you guys have to quit paying out your 20%. 20% of our budget was going to bribe these nasty Barbary pirates. You know, they were too cowardly, he said. So he ran for president and he became president and created the Marines, the history of it's thin. Well, it's not thin, it's there. Because it's Islam. We don't want to offend them. So he gets things going and he writes that this has been the greatest threat to our country since its inception, greater than Great Britain. He literally says it's greater than Great Britain as a threat. That's who we were breaking away from. And then he says his greatest fear is down the road another president who was unfamiliar with the history would open the doors to these people and let them pour in. And he said, it cannot coexist with this nation because we believe in a freedom of religion, and their religion in and of itself demands a theocracy. So it can't happen. Then what happens in this country is we're taught not to be free, not to think, as James Madison said, that not to be a religious and moral people. Then all of a sudden we have to bring in atheism and all this other stuff. And then we start to, those people that are liberal and crazy, they start to have a bigger impact on policies about immigration and things like that. And all of a sudden we're bringing in all this godlessness, all this anti-American rhetoric. Islam, my friends, is anti-Christian, anti-Jew, anti-anything, and especially you. That's a rhyme I just made. No, they're bad. I mean, they're just, it's bad. And I get people that will say, you know, oh man, you're careful. You say what you say out there. You get, you know, Kevin, are you sure? Hey, truth is what it is. I mean, it's the devil's religion. That is not, I mean, we, you know, people go, well, what's the difference? You know, Christianity only started 2,000 years ago. No, that's a lie. Christianity is a continuous fulfillment of the Old Testament. It's continuous fulfillment of Scripture. Without the Old Testament, there would be no Christianity. Christ would have had no relevance whatsoever. None. His words would have meant nothing. He was quoting Scripture that he was fulfilling in and of himself. And he was the Word. And the Word was God, you know, and all that. He was, without the Old Testament, wouldn't exist. So, that's not true. But Quran, yes, out of the blue, written partially by Muhammad and others. And it's just not inspired Scripture. And it's interesting, whenever a religion or government, it's when the two become one, too, government and religion, it becomes a huge problem. But you ever notice whenever they don't like the fact that you won't believe them, they're going to put more stipulations and more, you know, pressure on you. And so the Islamic communities are implementing Sharia law all over out there. I've spoken to people, you know, big real estate owners out of Southern California to Texas to Arizona, and they said the big wave was the Islam under Obama was Muslims more than anything else. They said, you know, the Mexicans or Hispanics from Mexico have always poured up. When I was in banking for years in Eastern Idaho or Eastern Washington and, you know, Yakima, Wenatchee and Walla Walla all the way down, there was a ton of Hispanic migrant workers, great workers, incredible. I have the highest opinion of them, and that's truth. You know, second, third generation things change because they're born on our soil. But so you get this first wave, you know, whenever that's been going on. And there was times people got frustrated because the overflow, And then what happens is you start to see people of other races and you think they're all the same. That's what was going on in Southern California. Well, the second big wave was from India. India and all then across the Indian Ocean to, you know, we got our, you know, our share of Indonesians and Vietnamese, and you get all that too. But the big one, these people say that I trust because they're so into that. They own tens of thousands of apartments, rooms, you know, whatever you call them, and units. And they said the big wave was Islam. They're the ones that came pouring in. They're the ones that are causing all the filth and the trash and the violence. And he said that they, he and she said that the Islamic people fight like dogs with the Hispanics. Apparently it's like gang warfare, but the cops just let it go. And then I've done further research on that. There's a ton of truth to it. The point is these people are being, like, Obama flooded this country with people who hate it by all practical purposes. That is what is systematically tearing us apart. It doesn't matter what color your skin is, okay? I don't care about that. What matters is your beliefs. If you believe, if you think Christianity is a farce, you can't survive in America. I'm not saying you need to be a Christian, but if you really have that attitude, what are you doing here? This country was founded by Christians for Christians. And, oh, yeah, I know the rest of it. Oh, they were this and that. I don't even care. I mean, that's not true. But the whole thing is we have a firm foundational set of beliefs. Until people understand this, folks, none of this stuff is ever going to correct, okay? You can say whatever you want. It's not do this, do that, do this, do that. Now, I do agree when you change your actions, your attitude will follow. There's tons of scientific evidence to prove that. But the bottom line is you can't change people's deepest, darkest, fundamental beliefs. They can. And so where we're sitting at this point in time is without a constant or a, you know, continuous re-education of our kids to the truth. I'm not asking for some religious nothing. I'm just saying teach them who our founders really were. You don't need to give us the pros and cons of every founding father. And people who are opposed to Jefferson say this. Why would you do that? They're dead. They gave it all for us. You don't do that. You just teach what they do. Hopefully it was profound and significant. And you get them to understand why were they here? What were their beliefs? What drove them? Oh, no. We have to understand that about the Mayflower, and we have to know about the Bible, and we got it. You're going to have to just teach it. And it's all going to be based on that. That's our country. You get that back to normal, you're done. You're fixed. But then what you got to do is you got to pluck, or I should say uproot these deceptive media corporations that are taking us over from two ends. I mean, really, folks, this is like, these are tough times. And I'll admit, we get Trump out there saying things. I'm like, dude, go back and just be quiet. But people hate him. Oh, do they hate him? I mean, they hate his guts. It's sad to watch. If you ever watch late night TV, and I do, not like incessantly, just saying. But, you know, there's like, I'll flip through. I'll watch. The first one that comes on is there's like Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, and what's his name? Oh, I can't think of it right now. That's terrible. The guy that made all his money making fun of O'Reilly. But anyway, it starts with a C, his last name. Colbert, okay? So these guys are grotesque. Colbert, liberal, hateful, yucky, block, right? Jimmy Kimmel, I used to like. Just political spewage coming out of his mouth. Bluck. Jimmy Fallon, old Saturday Night Live guy, wise in his interactions with others. Always smiling, not taking sides. I mean, that's his position. He's good. He entertains. Then after that, this guy Seth Meyers comes on, just rancid, rotten, sorry. And then that's one channel. And then there's this James Corden who comes on later, who's also fun, you know, and that's what I just kind of watch for fun. It's like just I have it on in the background while I'm working on coins or something. I don't want to be polluted with all this filthy garbage, but this stuff's everywhere in our media. And people want it, and they get agitated. Their spirit gets all wound up. This is what's going on in this country. Have you seen what's going on out there? I mean, it is seriously serious. We've got, you know, there's no doubt that this COVID pandemic is 100% concocted agenda, okay? You think about it. So we have this COVID pandemic. It takes off. Oh, no, we're all going to die. Well, we're not sure who's going to die. But there's people dying over there. And wait, all these statistics don't line up. Well, yeah, it doesn't matter. We got to be safe. We'll figure all that out later. You know, all this garbage. Well, there's all these people somewhere off in the distance dying. Do you know how many people I've spoken to? And this is the honest truth. I have spoken to at least six people that are either themselves or someone extremely close to them is taken care of, is responsible for someone who's passed away during this. And in every case, they're putting COVID on the death certificate. And I'm telling you, folks, this is going on everywhere. It is a scandal. You have been had. I know there's always the concern, what if? You know what? What if nothing? Forget about it. Look, statistically irrelevant. As I said, even in the last show, I tried to explain, you know, 1,100 deaths in Washington, all malarkey. But anyway, say 150 are real, say 200 are real. I don't care. But even if you keep the number 1,000 are real and you divide that by our 8 million, you've got 1 out of 8,000 people that supposedly died from COVID. 1 out of 8,000. That might not make much sense to you, but statistically, that's an anomaly. 1 out of 100, think about it, 1 out of 100 is 1%. 1 out of 1,000 is 1/10 of 1%. 1 out of 8,000 is 1/12.5 of a 10,000th. I mean, it's just not there. Okay, you get the point? Hope you do. It's nothing. You've been had. Then they start rioting and protests, and it's okay. We're not social distancing then. They don't say, hey, you know, before I go beat this guy with a stick, can I borrow them? Okay, you got a fresh mask there? I'd hate to, you know, breathe some of that germ. I mean, it, folks, ugh, we've been had. Will something worse be released in the future for the fall election, perhaps? Okay. I'll quit saying these are crazy times. You're listening, I don't know if you watch this stuff, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, he's been a dandy. He's blaming everybody, pointing the finger every direction. You know, he's on de Blasio, who is a train wreck, but man, I'm telling you what, folks, it's just the whole logic and concept is so rough and tough and so blaming and so limelight chasing and money chasing, you know. These people are just, they're eating this stuff up. And they're all buying into the same agenda without knowing it. The racism has gone crazy. We hear racism all the time. They're using it. They're dependent on it. They don't want it to go away. What I was going to say earlier that I think is really important. If somebody says, if they're racist, if they say, hey, white people have prevented me from being successful, I'm not going to sit there and tell you that, you know, anyone can do it or whatever, but I'm going to tell you, you take away personal responsibility. That's what I was talking about a bit ago when I said even like these unions, they come in and they say, it's not your fault, you're not responsible for anything, we got your back, you're the good guy, they're the bad guy, you'd be amazing. It's not even that you'd be amazing if it wasn't for them. It's really negative thinking, okay? If you've been in relationships or in a relationship or whatever, and you may sometimes know a person who is just really good at problem finding but not problem solving. It's fault finding, okay? It's a critical spirit. And I've talked about this on the show in the past. It's that fault finding critical spirit is, it's them, it's you, it's not me. And there's none of this, you know, biblically, we're supposed to be examining ourselves constantly. But when it comes from God, it's pleasant. When the Holy Spirit prompts us, it makes sense. Granted, yes, he'll convict us and show us our sins and where we need to change. But it comes with a form of certainty and settledness that you can't quite explain. But what comes from within us, our flesh, is usually real anxious and irritable and irritated. But that's not the way God operates. And so, when he creates each and every one of us, he knows our situation, where we're at, where we're going, what we're doing, what our potentials are. We've talked about talents a fair amount lately. He knows all this about us. So he knows. And the biggest thing is, well, I'm trying to get across, and I don't have the right words, but this whole racist cry, this, folks, this is detrimental to those that they're supposedly trying to help, supposedly, which is a lie. Because it's telling, say, the African-American community, it's not your fault. It's basically saying you're subpar, you're not as good, you've been mishandled, you've been mistreated, you've been oppressed. And unless this white guy or white people do this and do that, you'll never be successful. And you know what? You're going to constantly be seeing the same mantra, because we see it generation after generation, election after election, free this, free that. The government should take care of everything for you. Do you really think God thinks that way? I mean, I've heard people say, well, Christ said this and Christ. Christ didn't talk to nations. I mean, he did. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, the laws and rules and regulations and guidelines for the individual are different than the way God deals with a nation. When, you know, each of us is accountable to God, each and every one of us. It says Romans 14:12, for every man shall give account of himself to God. And don't just hang your hat on the once saved, always saved thing, folks. I'm not telling you got to earn your salvation at all. But I am telling you, I think you can, there's ways that you can mess it up, I suppose. But it's intentional. And the bottom line is, if you love God and you're serving him, then you're giving him your best, your first fruits. That's what it is. You give him your first fruits. So with this whole thing going on, and we're seeing this at every level, these kids have no problem blaming others and doing this stuff instead of taking responsibility. The whole ethical underlayment is missing out of this whole picture. And this, now we're getting these kids that are like, they don't even care. It's like, if you deal with kids that are really messed up, they act out really bad. That something happens to them, or at least, and again, perception's everything. Something happens to them, and they lash out in violence against some other kid with an inappropriate response at like 12 times the magnitude. And this is what we're seeing in these riots. First of all, do I even believe this stuff's real? I mean, as far as, is it real? Physically, yes. But are these people really, truly, enthusiastically inflamed over the death of George Floyd? No. I don't know if you've seen this stuff where Antifa all over the U.S. and West Coast especially, when there's going to be a protest, suddenly this great big, and it's happened on at least three different major cities in the Northwest, massive pile of brand new great big bricks suddenly gets put out in the middle of the street with plastic around it and a fence. You go down the streets, they're hiding caches. Cache, C-A-C-H-E. That means a little mini hoard, I suppose. They're hiding caches of sharp weapons and guns and all kinds of, yes, guns. Luckily, they haven't discharged many of them. But they're hiding them inside of the boundary, the perimeter that's been set for the protests, and they're coming in to just trash and maim and destroy, and these people are being lied to. They think that they're fighting for a cause. They think they're anti-fascist. I mean, folks, fascism is not a right-wing disorder. I hate that concept. Fascism is just the progression of liberalism. But the problem with liberalism is typically the people that lead liberalism don't have morals. They're either amoral or immoral. And they just tell the people what they want to hear to get elected and keep their seat. Even Chavez in Venezuela is a good example. These people get up and they say things you're like, that's a lie. You can tell. But people want to be told a lie. I actually was told that many, many years ago by a pastor. That people would rather believe a lie than the truth, if the truth's uncomfortable, which it usually is. But like he said, if you go up to a person and who's very unattractive, and not to judge, but just as an example, and you say, boy, you're really fat and ugly, okay? Obviously, that's cruel and mean and a horrible example, but the point is they don't want to hear that. You know, it's the truth. You tell someone they're beautiful when maybe they're not as beautiful, and we like that. So I'm not a psychologist. I'm getting in too deep. But the whole thing is like we want to be fed. We want to be anesthetized with our words, with the words that come at us. That a lot of people are intellectually lazy. We're not taught how to use our brains and be very intelligible. And we're made by God to be this way. And this is what's going on. They were letting other people think for us. This is what we're being taught. You know, I say not what to think, but how to think is how they should teach us. But they're not teaching us how to think. They're teaching us what to think. So they're teaching kids how to shut their brains off. I'm talking, you know, everything they do, they shut their brain off and let someone else think for them. What do you believe? I don't know. Let me check the internet. You know, what do you want for breakfast? I don't know. Let me check Google. Let's see what's good today. You know, everything is that brain is being transferred outside of themselves. And don't think we don't learn how to use it for the little things we don't like to do. So we're turning over our minds. We're not holding our minds captive, as the Bible says. We're giving them up. This is why all these lies are making sense to so many people. And people get frustrated and they do the only thing they can. They feel powerless and they go act out. Now, there's a bunch of thugs. You know, you think about this Antifa stuff. If you don't know what Antifa is, I'm sorry. It's this radical group that is claiming to be these, you know, fighters for social justice or whatever. They're just morons. They're thugs. They run around in black masks and black everything, and they vandalize and destroy and kill, and they're horrible. They ruin all good protests. They come out and fight against the right side every time, and they bring violence to the table, and the cops used to defend them all the time. Hopefully that's changing soon. So the bottom line is, with these, you know, the transfer of blame, the projection of responsibility for your spot in life onto another, is it's just not fair. And it's not right. And it's not right. It doesn't work. It guarantees your failure. You know? So, I was putting some notes in here. Let's see, guilt. I said the white guilt is used to project responsibility for the performance of African Americans, because I was watching something particular, onto others. The African American community has to see what their potential is, that they're God's people just like the rest of us. And they have to, and the divisiveness is so crazy. I was just mentioning that a minute ago when I'm sitting there like, we're looking at this potential election ahead, and they're doing so much to tear this country asunder, tear it apart, literally, to get Trump out. That, you know, how do we heal from this stuff? I mean, people die. Things are going crazy. Can you imagine around the world what we look like? I mean, you know, we look foolish. We look like we have a broken system. We're spoiled brats. I've been around the world, not as much as some, but a fair amount. And I've heard that term used. Americans are a bunch of spoiled brats. You know, it used to be that's what they would say about England back in the 70s and 80s. The British were kind of snobby, you know, whatever. Now it's Americans. We're the rudest, most obnoxious people on earth. You should see how some American tourists behave. Woo! Or not only, you know, I mean, just speaking down to people, saying things I've heard I wouldn't even repeat. Asking crazy questions, you know, and then some. Really, trust me. I mean, we have too much, things are too good. And when things get like that, and you get wealth from God, which America has, one of the greatest resource countries in the world, it is actually, we get these blessings from God and we're not thankful or grateful and we're wasteful, what's God going to do? Folks, if you took your money, and you spent it like our government did, well, you know, this month I'm just going to have to keep racking up debt. I really don't have a choice. I'm only making $48,000 a year, but you know, it's really awesome because I got these credit cards. Well, I can charge $48,000 every 2 months, buy whatever I want, you know. That's kind of the logic of our government. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, they want money. Planned Parenthood, you know, yeah, they do abortions and stuff, but you know, they do some good things. Like what? Well, you know, I don't know. They just told me they do. And you know, they're helping young girls out and they're educating people on sex. You know, they're educating young people on, well, that's great because they never figured out without Planned Parenthood. But the thing is what's going on is we're spending this huge percentage of our money. And then it'd be like you having this ridiculous credit card habit that just blows your income through, you know, away. Well, you know, I got a friend who's in India and he's kind of struggling, you know, with his stuff and his family. And I definitely want to keep him as my ally. So I'm going to send him $3,000, you know, well, I know a couple guys that are really struggling with some stuff down the road and, you know, they need a gun. I got to get them a gun. I mean, this is what we do on a national basis. We rack up debt and then we give it away. Now, that's the problem with the fiat currency system, by the way. If we were using hard assets, real gold, you run out. And it also takes the authority away from the government. The government doesn't have the right to just randomly spend our money like they do. And it's funny, we call it the government when it's really our elected officials that are doing this. But once we get there, once they get there, the system is in play. It's in full roll. The only way, I guess, to look at this is the rioters are showing us the evil that is spreading across America and globally. And, you know, like I said, you're not seeing this elsewhere. We have these crazy liberal stations. What happens when Trump won? What happens when Trump wins again? Oh, wait. How about if I say what happens when Trump wins again? I like the Trump wins better. But when Trump wins, are they going to get worse? I mean, they're like, that's it, gloves are off. I mean, we're out there seeing cops getting beat up, spit on, kicked at. Folks, they're humans too, granted. And now we've got, folks, we've got this, did you see this deep policeization movement going on? Okay, so what is this? LA wants to defund all their police. They're threatening to do this in Minneapolis, all this stuff, to defund the police. Who wants this? The dang devil. Folks, I'm telling you, you get this bad boy through and we are D-O-N-E done. This is insanity. You're like, oh, we'd never do that. Right. How long do you think it's been that we would even tolerate those kind of ignorant comments in this society, even in the 60s and 70s? You know, you can always find some guy who's maybe out in left field a little bit talking that way, but not on mainstream media, leading organized groups. We need to get rid of all the police. We're coming up with some different ideas on how to police our own communities. Really? That's going to be wonderful. You're not going to have any, no coordination, no good effective communication. You wouldn't have the budget to buy all the equipment that you need. And then when things get tough and bad, what are you going to do? Who's trained to do what, when, where, and how? Because guess what? Might makes right. It's just the way it is. Evil is stopped with force. Evil is not stopped with kindness and gentleness. It's defeated internally for us that way. We can walk through it, but evil needs to be confronted. That's why they never stop. It's just, it's evil by its very nature. So we've got a whole thought process going on between the media and the academia. I think you get it. And then we're going to be back into full stride soon, which is really dumb to hear, even hear myself say. We are into full stride, and no matter who you are or what you do, if you're holding off, get out and go do it. If you got a business or something you need to run, go do it. I mean, it's time's up. And these riots and protests showed us just as much. I mean, you know, this stuff, it's not an accident. And like I said, we've got, you know, the cop was a setup. It's a bad deal. So here's what something that crossed my mind at the beginning of the show. I've yet to hear anybody, I've never, ever, ever heard anyone yet this far that says what happened to George Floyd made sense or was true or right or just or fair. No one does. I've had one guy say, well, you know, he had drugs in his system and whatever else the other thing was. I don't recall. But it didn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know. But in other words, people aren't saying it's okay. Now, where the frustration might come in, they didn't act quickly enough to charge the guy. But you know what? They don't always do that either with civilians. But I do agree that there is a, you know, and they should favor their own hugely. But then once they know better, they just have to act on it. And I'm afraid they're bringing that second degree down on the police officer. And first they had third degree manslaughter, then they brought second degree. I'm curious if that'll stick, you know, because you have to have been knowingly committing a felon and et cetera, or felony, and I was reading it. It's going to be a tough road. They may have done that on purpose to let the guy off, you know. We've got so much going on in this country, and here's the thing, you know, because of the way we're trained, we got what's called a paradigm shift, right? I learned about this in college, and two people see the same event and process it in completely opposite ways. Depends on your perspective. So that perspective is made up of a whole host of things. Your current state of mind, your personal experiences, your personality traits, your body chemistry, and all kinds of stuff. So if you take that one step further and incorporate human, like, survival traits, like in-group, out-group bias, and what I was calling, confirmation bias, that's what cliques are all about, and the potential for self-reinforcing feedback loops of anxiety to explode into massive, unbridgeable divisions within our society, it becomes highly likely. This is not a new idea. I don't think I even need to explain it per se. But people are exhibiting signs of crazy madness when confronted with the monstrous events that we think are playing out on the screen before us. There's an information war occurring that's aimed at creating hair trigger reactions to events in order to advance particular political agendas, right? It doesn't matter what the issue of the day is. Today it's burning down in Minneapolis over police brutality. Then tomorrow it's, you know, the beating of cops, and then it's the trashing of this or that, or, you know, it's Trump said this or the, you know, whatever. So when you watch George Floyd being murdered, it takes you off. It makes people mad. And it's normal to see that. I think everyone's outraged is what I'm saying. But I think what happens is we need to know how to focus this energy for good. There's good to be done out there, and we got to apply ourselves and do that. That's the only thing we can do. Tyranny is where we're heading in this country, folks. They're trying to get us there. And who's, you know, these fools like Bernie Sanders, maybe they think they're going to be our leaders. I don't know. But I'm telling you, I'm processing a lot of this stuff right now, trying to figure things out. I got people that talk to me that want to move to America from other countries, and people from here that want to move to other countries. And people don't know where to go or what to do. They're very uncomfortable. But when America, so goes America, or as goes America, so goes the world. And I think that's really important to understand, because we are literally that big of a deal. We are America. I'm watching, you know, I've seen these videos where these kids go in and they trash and ransack and steal and during all this, all these, you know, protests. And it's just so wrong. And do they even get caught? We don't know. We never hear the follow-up. Must not sell. Must not get the ratings. So bottom line is, folks, today I think I just I kind of briefly touched on, I was watching all this stuff with racism this morning, and I'm so sick of that words being so abused and so used up. It's bad. But you know what? It's a way to take responsibility off of people and put it onto others. That's what's going on. When they keep saying they're racist. They don't like you. It's their fault that you're messed up, and it's their fault that you're failing and that you're not who you're supposed to be. And this, folks, this is such a trap. The left is trapping these people in. Can you imagine if they spoke in an empowering way like Trump does? His attitude, you know, good conservative attitudes. I'll help you out of the ditch. You got the right attitude. Grab my hand. Let's go. I'll teach you how to fish and feed you for a lifetime. The liberals, socialists, whatever, want to give them the fish so they never know how to fish. And they're dependent on the government. Well, that bankrupts everything, okay? And folks, we're seeing a lot going on. The markets are live and everything. Get yourself secured in hard assets. You've heard me say it before. How long are you going to wait? And how bad is it going to have to get? And do you really think I'm wrong? I also appreciate any kind of good review. You know, if you can do some 5-star reviews, like 3 of them, we give you 2 nice Morgans. That's an awesome opportunity. So anyway, thanks. 444-0044 in Spokane. I appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate the support. Take care. God bless, and have a beautiful weekend. Make it sunny, please. God bless. Bye-bye.